Good morning, Boker Tov. Welcome back to Living with Emuna. So glad and grateful to be together to continue our journey to grow and learn in our relationship with Hashem. No better time of the year than Elul Tishrei. We're soon going to coronate the king. And the king right now, you know, tomorrow there's supposed to be some major meeting in the Oval Office. I'm not a Rebbe. I wasn't invited. Good, bad. I don't have an opinion. But the reason it's being hailed and celebrated is because to set up a meeting with the president to be in the Oval Office, wow. Wow. I have a much more impressive meeting tomorrow. I'm not in the Oval Office. But anywhere a Jew is, HaMelech Basada, the king is in the field. You don't need an invite. You don't need protexia. You can bring your gabbai with you to this meeting. But you have access to the King of Kings, to the Almighty, to the creator of the universe, wherever you are. HaMelech Basada. Often or at times it can feel like there are layers to get through to him, to access him, to feel his presence. But this is a time of year where his presence can be felt palpably, tangibly, everywhere we are. And wherever you are, no matter what's going on in your life, HaMelech Basada, the king, is here. So this is the time. We're working on it. It's always great to be together. We always start with gratitude. Our Emunah series sponsors, Dr. Zavi and Bella Morgan, in memory of Rabbi Dr. Brian Gabbett, in memory of Bella's mother, Dr. Ellen Chanzer. We're very grateful to them for their generosity, as they also sponsor in honor of our precious IDF soldiers. Hashem should protect them as they protect us. Series is also sponsored generously, anonymously, in memory of the fallen soldier of the B'nai David Yeshiva in Mechina in Eli, and all the wounded soldiers since October 7th. May they all have a recovery. Please continue to daven for David Ben Ziva, son of Rav Tzvi Kastan, Rosh Yeshiva, the Hezda Yeshiva Mitzpeh Ramon, where the sponsor's son Matan learned before being drafted. He was paralyzed from the neck down after being seriously injured while fighting in Gaza. When the war began, he was in Nepal and he immediately flew home to fight. We continue to keep David in our tefillos and should have a recovery as a refuah shlema. Shir is also sponsored this morning by Mitchell and Ruthie Weiss, Leila Nishmas's father, Moshe Ben Ruvain Milton Weiss, Leila Nishmas Marvin Matizyahu Ben David, for a grandfather who lived with pure emunah pshuta. And also our learning today is dedicated in honor and memory of our dear and our beloved Opa, Yechavit's grandfather, my grandfather, by extension, our Opa, whom we knew and loved, Arnold Goldsmith. Our learning should be in memory of Aaron Ben Yehuda Halevi, a man of tremendous emunah who survived, lost everything, rebuilt a beautiful family, and we have such gratitude to him. Our learning should elevate his neshama. Two quick things before we dive into our emails and back to our learning, the new sefer that we started together. One, a reminder, we've moved over from WhatsApp groups to a community. We're going to discontinue the group. So if you're in the group, you're not going to be notified or get bonus material. Please join the WhatsApp community, which is done to protect your privacy and security. So it's in your interest to join it. That is number one. And number two, we're inching closer and closer. Not sure exactly the start date yet, but I'm excited to share with you first and foremost, our beloved Emunah Shir, this project called Nishmasi. Marilyn and others have been working closely with me on, which is taking Emunah from a 45-minute Shir once a week and expanding it to a movement, a community, an effort each and every day. We have 8 WhatsApp groups, communities, Emunah in, business, shidduchim, marriage, health and wellness, and life, every day content, in addition to many other projects which will be part under this umbrella, like annual Emunah retreat, annual Emunah workbooks, annual Emunah groups, breakout groups, all kinds of very, very exciting things. It's being actively worked on, and I can't wait to officially share it with you, hopefully in the very near future. Okay, let's dive into some fantastic emails. They always are amazing. Thank you to all those who share. Please continue to send, even if we can't read all of them. I read each and every one, respond to each and every one, and it inspires and motivates me. So someone shared with me a poem she wrote last week. We spoke about that we are not in control. We can't control everything. We take the initiative. We make the effort, but the outcome and the result is up to Hashem. So she wrote me the following poem. The outcome is his. It didn't work out. My cake was a flop. The batter with all the ingredients went over the top. I spent so much time preparing this cake to not get upset all my effort it did take. And what about the job that I did not get, even though all the right people I spoke to and met? The speech that was a dud, the time I came late, the close friends who moved to another state. In all these cases, I did my best, I put in the effort, and Hashem did the rest. Clearly success is in Hashem's hands. The outcome doesn't depend on my grand plans. When the book I published didn't sell out, I knew not to fret. It's from Hashem, no doubt. So long as we keep trying, we can know and believe that success isn't measured by what we achieve. Beautiful. Maybe we'll put it in the community, not the group, to motivate and inspire you to move over if you haven't yet. But we'll put it in the Emunah community, not the group. Beautiful. A beautiful thought. And I love how it was expressed. and captured through a great poem. Another email. I've been listening to the classes for a while. I've gained so much. Although I married a long time, I find it, every time I go to the mikvah, a very big deal. For some people, it's very traumatic, very difficult. Many, it's very inspiring, very moving, but it's not simple. The author of the email writes, she recently went. On arrival, the lady told me to go to room number 23. I was spacing out and I said it. And as she said it, so I asked again, what number room? When she repeated the number 23, I literally jumped. It felt like a hug from Hashem saying, you're doing your bit, it will all be okay. It was an incredible feeling I've never had before. Thank you, wishing you a lot of strength to continue to inspire others. The little winks, the little nods. Sometimes I even wonder about myself and ourselves and the streak we've been keeping about the number 23. There's a fine line between emunah bitachon and seeing the hints and the hugs from Hashem and silly superstition and numbers, and is that really a message? And I recognize and I admit it's a fine line, but when people feel fulfilled and they feel gratified, they feel supported, they feel loved, they see something that makes them feel, this isn't a coincidence. Everything in my life is by design. There are no chances. This isn't random. And even this, I love the number 23, Kapitel Chav Gimel, we're learning, we're living, and that's the room I'm in, and now I feel calmer, and now I feel I love this mitzvah more, and now I feel a feeling I've never had because I'm enveloped in a hug from Hashem. This isn't chance or a coincidence. First of all, what mikvah? How big is it that it's room 23? Kenai Nahara Baruch Hashem. What a beautiful community. So active, so much Kedusha and Tahara taking place. Room number 23. Oh, beautiful. But to not just see that it was random, what a consciousness, what a mindfulness, what a way to live life, to look and to interpret and to feel and to hear that there was no chance. I'm at a red light and that's what it says on the license plate in front of me. I'm assigned a room and that's the room that I'm in. This is what happened. None of it was chance and random. All of it was from above. And when it feels like a hug and a wink, especially when we need it most, wow, that's special. I want to read to you the next email, which is a beautiful email. It's a wonderful email, as all the emails are. But I want to tell you, when I got to the punchline of the email, I almost fell off my chair. Punchline of the email really wowed me. Good afternoon, Rabbi Goldberg. I recently was in another state visiting my youngest son and family. My son booked me a lovely flight, a lovely first class ticket home. It was delayed a bit, but otherwise it was a wonderful flight. Prior to my leaving, my son asked if I wanted to Uber to the airport, about a 40-minute ride, or did I want to leave my car at the airport garage for the week. I didn't like the idea of walking alone to the parking garage at night when I returned home. I'm 70 and in good health, and schlepping my suitcase, so I opted for the Uber. I arranged to have a friend drive my car and pick me up from the airport when I came home. While waiting at the baggage claim for my two pieces of checked luggage, I texted him to let him know I was retrieving my luggage and I would be out soon. His reply was, great, but I'm not in your car, a Honda, I'm in a Mitsubishi. I asked him why he wasn't in my car and his reply was, I'll tell you when I see you. At this point, the luggage carousel was turning with suitcases beginning to appear. My smaller bag dropped pretty quickly and I expected my larger bag to follow, but it never appeared. My larger bag had my CPAP, most of the clothes I wear on a daily basis, shoes, matching hats. But as I'm standing there alone in the deserted part of the airport, I thought, my suitcase is exactly where it's meant to be. I gave the baggage clerk my missing baggage check ticket, and she told me my suitcase was in Wichita, and I could expect it to be delivered to my home the following day around 8 p.m. I thanked her, called my friend to tell him I was walking out. He explained that my car would not start, which is why he was in my car. He said, I tried everything. I locked, unlocked the doors, waited a bit, tried again. The car wouldn't start. At this point, I'm so grateful I had not left my car in the parking garage. I told him it could be my key fob battery was dead. I would try to spare one when I got home. On the drive home, I asked Grok, my AI go-to, what could possibly cause my car to not start? Grok gave me suggestions of how to start it with the key fob batteries dead. Thanked my friend, bid him farewell, retrieved my spare key, tried to start my car. Nope, cars did not start. Suggestions from Grok did not work. So I said out loud, I'm exactly where I'm meant to be, and this will be resolved in the morning. As I prepared to wash my face and go to bed, I turned on the hot water faucet, and nada. No water at all came out. I went downstairs to check my tankless water heater, and it greeted me with a flashing error code. At this point, I literally laughed out loud. I was changing my pajamas. I thought I could weigh myself to see how much weight I gained on vacation. I stepped on the digital scale, and you guessed it, totally dead. At this point, I asked Grok if there had been an electromagnetic pulse within the past week. This issue I quickly resolved by changing the battery in the scale. As I crawled to bed, I'm recounting the events that transpired. Missing luggage, dead car, no hot water. I thanked Hashem for seeing me home safely. Thanks to all the Emunah teachings, I was able to go to sleep in total peace. I knew he had all the things under control. The next morning, ERS came to my house within 5 minutes, told me I need a new battery, which I ended up getting a 20% discount. My HVAC people came and determined the technician performed my spring service neglected to clean the tankless system, and my luggage arrived 8:15 that evening. Ready the punchline, that last line of the email? I'm not Jewish, but I listened to your Amunah series. Hashem, everything's where it's meant to be. I was at peace. I'm surprised she didn't say Kriya Shema Lamita. I'm not Jewish, but I listened to the Amunah series as well as Parsha and 10 minutes of Tanya. Thank you for being a light to the nations and to me, which enabled me to embrace my place and see Hashem's goodness in my life. I want to frame this and put it on the wall. It's amazing. Thank you, Patricia, for writing and taking the time, for listening and for sharing. Blows my mind. It's amazing. You know, Judaism is not meant for the Jews. We make a mistake of thinking that Hashem introduced Yiddishkeit, Torah, Judaism to the world for the Jews. We should retreat, go into our corner, do our thing. But Judaism was meant to transform the world. Avraham Avinu stood on a soapbox and he proclaimed ethical monotheism. And he said, who's with me in this journey towards Hashem, this life and this lifestyle? And originally Hashem, Nesiva Shel Neslanim Rebbe describes, Hashem originally when he created the world wanted to give Torah to the entire world, but the world proved unworthy and the world didn't deserve it. Because the first three stories of the world post Gan Eden are stories of Cain and Hevel, jealousy, the story of Migdal Bavel, the tower, which is all about honor. Nasalon, Hashem will make a name. And the story of the generation of Noah, of the flood, who were filled with lust, who violated boundaries. So God took away the boundary that holds back the water. And the Slanim Rebbe points out, the Mishnah Novos teaches, there are three things that remove a person from the world. And not coincidentally, what are those three things? Kina, taiva, v'kavod, jealousy, lust, and honor. How did our rabbis know that? Because they simply opened the Torah, the Chumash. And the first three stories are jealousy, lust, and honor, and that took people out and cost them the world. So we too, we lose our world, our sanity, our equilibrium, our balance, our world, our relationships. They're lost when we live with jealousy, lust, and honor. It removes us from the world. And then the next three, so Hashem said that this world's not worthy of my Torah. They don't know how to live it. They live selfishly. They're egomaniacs. They live for lust, jealousy, and honor. And then he keeps looking down at his world and he sees Avram. And he says Avram and his son Yitzchak and his son Yaakov. And he sees the three of them, their lives are defined by Torah, Avodah, Gemilas, Chasadim. And our rabbis conclude there are three things, three legs upon which the world stands. And they are the study and the living of Torah, Avodah, which used to be the function of the temple, the Beis HaMikdash, today takes the form of tefillah, of prayer, and Gemilas Chasadim, loving kindness. So our rabbi said, three things remove you from the world, the first three stories in Chumash, jealousy, lust, and honor, Cain and Hevel, the Tower of Bavel, and the story of the flood. Three things the world sits on. You want your world to be stable. You want your world to be strong. You want your world to be firm. You want your world to let you sleep at night, an equilibrium, a balance, a healthy, a happy. Then you have to have Torah, Avodah, Gemilas Chasadim in life. So God says, the world that was unworthy of the Torah, I'm not giving it to them. Who am I giving it to? I'll give it to those who want it. Everyone else is focused on themselves, ego, narcissistic. Avram, he's sitting outside his tent on the day of his bris at an advanced age. He's in more pain at the thought of not doing nice things for others than he is from his own surgery with no anesthesia. So that's who I want to give my Torah to. And why did he give Avram the Torah? He said, go be a light unto nations. V'heye bracha. Go be a blessing. Go transform the world. And was he successful? Absolutely. Look around the world today. The majority of the globe are Muslims, which are monotheists technically, Christians, who are not monotheists, but the Rambam writes, advance the world closer. They believe in our God, even if they have another addendum, which we don't subscribe to, but they do believe in our God. The majority of the world population subscribe to the God of the Jews, which is the impact of Avraham Avinu. He transformed the world. America, on this 250th anniversary, is founded on biblical language. The Declaration of Independence uses biblical language and the language of the God of the Jews, and the whole notion of the equality of all man, the whole notion that equality comes because we all from God, in God we trust, all of this, all these principles and values and language, it all comes from the Jewish people. That's what we're meant to do and how we're meant to impact the world. We're not meant to retreat and hide and keep it to ourselves. Lubavitcher Rebbe, of blessed memory, had one of his many campaigns to bring the seven Noahide laws to the world, to try to teach the world to observe the Sheva Mitzvot B'nei Noach, to be a Ger Toshav, live a life. You don't have to become Jewish to follow the Jewish prescription for the world. Become a Noahide, observe the seven Noahide laws. The Rebbe also had a campaign to bring a moment of silence to public schools, where you're not allowed to have prayer because of separation of church and state, but let there be a moment of silence. Bring back meditation, focus, humility, and ultimately God. So we're meant to teach the world. So when I get an email from someone who says, I listen to the Emunah Shir, by the way, I'm not Jewish, thanks for introducing me to Hashem, I say, that's not weird at all. That's what we're here to do. That's what we're meant to do. That's the impact we're meant to have. When we go to work or work out at the gym, it's not only the fellow Jew who bageled us that we should bring our Torah to, it's non-Jews as well, to bring the messages and the values. Has the world ever needed it more than now, than today? The world we're living in that is so chaotic and confused and upside down in basic definitions and institutions in understanding morality. We're meant to be here to teach, to illuminate, to elevate, to transform. So this email blew me away because it's a long email and it's a long story. And you read it, you say, who is this super stark, from Heimisha, spiritual? Who is this? Did she just come back from a third year of seminary? Who is this? Who she's describing? Lost my luggage, it's Hashem. It's embracing my place, it's where I'm meant to be. My car didn't start, it's Hashem, it's where it's meant to be. And my scale is broken, and my hot water is not, it's all Hashem, it's all where it's meant to be. By the way, I'm not Jewish and I love all your shiurim, and it makes me feel like I'm where I'm supposed to be, which is an amazing feeling, so thank you so much. Dear Rabbi, I hope you had a restful summer. Just saw that Yinon Magal from Channel 14 News in Israel shared the following video clip on his WhatsApp, and he sent me the link. Again, maybe we'll post it in the community. That's why we have the community, to share these types of things. It is of Ran Kazuk. Maybe I'm mispronouncing. I apologize. I don't follow Israeli soccer. The current manager of the Israeli soccer team, Hapoel Be'er Sheva. Last night, they were playing a major playoff game in the UEFA Champions League playoff round. I'm sure you all were glued to your TVs. Against an Azerbaijan team. If they had won, it would have meant great honor, major money for the team, and elevation to Europe's top soccer tournament, along major teams like Real Madrid and Manchester City. They literally lost in the last seconds, the last kick of the game in regulation. As we say in Hebrew, bidaka tishim. FYI, that's where the expression of doing something in the last second comes from, because soccer games are 90 minutes. And they ended up losing in overtime. When the coach was asked after the game, the interviewer says, what do you have to say about the failure? You were seconds away from getting to the major tournament and you failed. Don't you feel your fate was so cruel? And the coach said two words, Baruch Hashem. You see, the interviewer kind of shocked by the answer. You just lost. Why are you saying Baruch Hashem? And the coach says, Barur, Toda al hakol gam al zeh. It's clear. Person has to have gratitude for everything, even this. Gam eregeim ha'ilam eschazkim lomdim mivinim dvarim al atzmenu ubaruch Hashem al hakol. Even from difficult moments, even from hard disappointments, we learn. We learn about ourselves, so we have to be grateful for everything, even for this loss and what went with it. Baruch Hashem. Wow, what a emunah from someone not wearing a kippah. Not wearing a kippah, we don't know anything about his life. The coach of Hapoel Be'er Sheva. Wow. Took that moment and made a big kiddush Hashem when he answered that interview and said, Toda al hakol, Baruch Hashem, it's all from Hashem. Absolutely incredible. Incredible. Okay. One last email, then we'll dive back into our text. I'll tell you actually one other story before this email. So Baruch Hashem, I became a Zayda again last night. My daughter in Yerushalayim had a baby boy. Thank you, Simchas, for us all, Amir Hashem. So she shared with me, she said, Abba, in her condition, she wasn't writing an Emunah email, but she did tell me the story and said, say it over. So she was in labor, and I will expand or zoom out the story. I had concern, and what would be, her due date technically is today, I'm telling you a lot. Hopefully they're not watching from there. But what would be if she were overdue and there would be a conflict between being at my grandson's bris in Yerushalayim and being here with you for Rosh Hashanah? That is, for me, a nightmare of epic proportions. Because family comes first, and my biological family always comes first, but you're also my family. So this is a conflict between different members of your family. How do you choose? Family and strangers or acquaintances is an easy choice. Family and work is an easy choice. But family and family is a hard choice. And I dreaded being put in that position. What would I do? This conflict between family and family, biological family, and those who are also your family. So first of all, with enormous, every time I expressed out loud being concerned about it, of course, everyone around me, i.e. my biological family, said, "Hey, Mr. Embrace Your Place." They said it nicer than that, but essentially, "Hey, Mr. Emuna Man, hey, Mr. Embrace Your Place, Patricia, the non-Jew in Kansas City, has more Emuna than you." They never heard of her, they didn't know that, but that's what they're gonna say now. And they were right. Every time I had to take a deep breath and remember, you're not in control. You don't determine when this baby will be born. Who knows if it will even be a conflict? So what are you wasting energy on, and what are you worried about? And if it is, you'll figure it out. But that was an avoda. I share that with you. That's the opposite of a flex. I share that with you because I was weak. I am weak. And I also work on emunah every day. It's not enough we have the shiur once a week. That's why we're launching the Shemasi, because I need to work on it every day, as evidenced when the rubber meets the road. It's easy. In wonderful moments, Amunah Hashem, thank you, I found the parking spot, I made the flight, the thing worked out, I love you, it's all amazing, Baruch Hashem. And then you start to get anxious and worried about what will be, things are not even in your control, and they're not even here yet, so why are you worried about them? And you have to take that deep breath, that neshima, and restore in neshama, and say, "Hey, Mr. Amunah man, look at the decal, and the bumper sticker, and the coffee cup, and all the swag, and live it, don't just manufacture it. But live it." And so Baruch Hashem and Hashem worked it out, that Amir Hashem, I'll be able to go to the bris and be back in time with you, my family, here on Rosh Hashanah. Now we just need Iran to cooperate. Just the minor detail. So, you know, if you can offer that bracha, I would be grateful. In any case, the earlier she would have given birth, obviously the less potential conflict it would be, and the more calm I would have been. And she might have started early signs of labor and might have looked like it was happening early, and it was frustrating that it still took longer, which meant the next day, which meant a different day for the bris. But then it all worked out, because after the delivery, in recovery, she's still there. Who knows if this nurse listens and is part of our Living with Emunah community and world. She has the most amazing English-speaking, incredible nurse who happens to be close friends with my brother and his family, who's eager to take care of her and hook her up with everything she needs. And she said, "Abba, Hashem had me give birth exactly when I was supposed to. Had it been earlier, it'd be a different shift. I'd have a different nurse. I wouldn't recover as smoothly. Hashem always has a plan. Always works out. Sometimes we see it. Sometimes it's clear. Sometimes we understand it. And other times it takes time. And other times it won't be till the next world. But Hashem has a plan." Now maybe, so I won't be here next Wednesday morning for the Emunah Shir. The greatest of reasons, I feel incredibly blessed, and I offer and give that blessing to everyone who's waiting and longing to find someone to have a baby with, or has found the person but is waiting to hold the baby in their arms, or is waiting to become a grandparent or a great-grandparent, which is not a small thing either. Everyone in the year ahead should be gebenched and blessed and see all their dreams come true and all their tefillahs answered, and celebrate only simchas. Only simchas. We, in our shul, for many years, before Kol Na'arim on Sukkos, which is coming up, which for many is a very hard day, one of the hardest of the year, if a person's longing to hold a child, whether it's primary or secondary infertility, Kol Na'arim Simchas Torah is a cruel day. When countless gather under, we happen to have the Guinness World Record talus, and when hundreds are gathered under a talus, parents are happy and celebrated, and someone's watching, waiting, longing, it's a hard day. So many years ago, before the Aliyah of Kol Na'arim, while that talus is being held and those children are gathered, and before that Aliyah and the candy bags are distributed, we say a tefillah. We have a special, beautiful prayer that we offer for people. People send in names. Most come from not our community, but I post online, "Please give us names." The Google form, you could just give the Hebrew name, you don't even have to give the English name. Some give their own names, some give names of others. And last week, someone whose name has been on that list, a couple for 10 years, had their first healthy child. Just as an aside, I may have mentioned this. People send in names, and it's an honor to be able to daven for them. Rarely does anyone ever follow up. Occasionally they do. Say, by the way, I know you gave you the name. I know you don't even know me. I don't know you. Just want to let you know. Baruch Hashem, we had a simcha. And it's a wonderful thing because I keep thinking about those names. And you daven for people, and you love to know. So I wish them a huge mazel tov after that, waiting that amount of time, and how excited we are to take their names. And hopefully we can end this list. Let there be no names this year. So I give that bracha. What a bracha it is. So I won't be here next Wednesday morning. I give a bracha that everyone should miss the things they have to go to because they have to attend their own simchas instead. Maybe we should give the Emuna Shir from Yerushalayim next week. We'll see. You know I like to drop these hints. We'll see. Haven't cleared that with the powers that be. Didn't clear that yet. So we'll have to get clearance on that from the boss, the bosses, the authorities. So we'll take it from there. Okay, we'll come back to this last email maybe next week. Let's pick up where we left off. We're learning this incredible new sefer, Or V'chayis Nafshenu, Nosim B'Torah Sachasidus, from Rav Mendel Wachter. And we pick up on page 20. That's where we left off. He was introducing us to that Emuna can't be conceptual. Emuna is not academic. Emuna is not theoretical. Emuna is not in an ivory tower. Emuna has to come off the shelf and be lived and put into practice. Emuna should be visible in our demeanor. Are you calm, cool, collect? You have it all together? Do you know that it's all going to work out? Do you realize that the King of Kings and the source of all has your back? That you don't need protexia or connections to get into his Oval Office, but Amelach Basada, he's ready and listening whenever you want to talk to him. Tzadik be'emunaso yichya. The tzadik, how do we find life? An emunah that's yichya. It has to be an emunah that's alive. The emunah is alive. It can't be an emunah that's dormant or suppressed or an emunah that's hidden. It's got to be an emunah that lives. The trust, the faith, the acknowledgement, like our friend Patricia. Tzadik be'emunaso yichya. It's got to be an emunah that I lost the luggage and the water didn't work and the car didn't start and the scale was broken and I slept like a baby. And I slept like a baby. Ah, how? How'd you sleep like a baby? Because he neilo yanum v'lo yishan shomei Yisrael. I know that he's staying awake so I could sleep. So why wouldn't I sleep like a baby? I know that it's for whatever reason that the water heater was broken, the car didn't start, the luggage was lost, the scale's broken, and we'll figure it all out tomorrow. So why shouldn't I sleep like a baby? When I sleep like a baby, I am demonstrating, I am living with emuna. And I'm not criticizing or judging, but if I'm up all night because I'm so worried about what will be, where's Hashem in that equation? Where's the emunah? It's just the thing that you go to a class Wednesday morning? That's all that is? What about putting it into practice? What about living with it? Sleep like a baby, because he's up all night so we can sleep. And stop worrying, catch yourself even when those thoughts knock and don't let them in. He's in charge, he's in control, not you, and it will work out on his schedule the way it's meant to be. So move on. Carry on. Keep calm and carry on. There's nothing to worry about. So in our very demeanor, our blood pressure reflects our emuna. Our sweat glands reflect our emuna. Our demeanor and our posture and whatever that fakakta thing that you wear that tells you how you slept last night that really is counterproductive, as all the research shows, because now you obsess over data that doesn't actually make you change anything about your lives. But I have no opinion about this. So, good, you woke up and now you know how you slept last night. When it should register, maybe we should produce one. Oh, here's our next swag. Where's Alana? We're going to make a measuring device that tells you how you slept last night with an emunah meter. Like poor sleep? Ooh, got to work on the emunah. Slept like a baby? Ooh, emunah's off the charts. Like an emunah meter. We'll make an emunah meter sleep measurement device. And everything measurement device. Again, no judgment. I know sleep is not in people's control. They do their best. I'm not envious of those who find it hard to fall or stay asleep. I'm not saying it with judgment. But if it's sleep or it's just a smile, right? We'll have a measurement device about how much you smiled. Have they produced that yet? Can you wear something that will tell you whether you smiled enough today? That's what you should have. And that smiling device will be a measurement of emunah or not. We talked about the smile and what that means. Offer a smile, receive a smile, reciprocate a smile, the positivity. It's last week's parsha. I know we want to get back into this. We just read last week about the klalos, the curses that come. Why? 98 curses come all because tachas asher lo avarat Hashem lokecha b'simcha uvetuv levav. You didn't smile enough. In the commentaries, asks Rav Avram Shor Shlita in his new sefer Nezer HaParsha and Dvarim. He asks, seriously? Seriously, God? 98 horrific, graphic curses. The Kloizenberg Rebbe said the Holocaust was the fulfillment of those curses. October 7th was the fulfillment of those curses. And why did that come? You didn't smile. Not because we were immoral or unethical or failed Hashem or were disobedient. You did everything and you did it all right, but you did it without a smile. You didn't smile. You weren't positive. You weren't joyful. There was no smile in your life. You weren't happy. You weren't happy. You weren't happy. And that's why it happened? That makes sense? You believe in a God who brings misery and catastrophe because people didn't smile? Okay, you could work on your smile. We could all work on our smile. That, I want to tell you a word by Rav Avram Shor. You'll never hear or read that pasuk the same again. What is the word tachas? Underneath, because, tachas. Tachas, asher lo avadetes Hashem elokecha, because you didn't serve Hashem, besimcha, with joy, uvetuv lev God, with a glad and a happy heart. Tachas means under. What the pasuk, what Moshe was telling us is, what's underneath why you're not happy? You know what's underneath why you're not happy? Ego instead of elokus. You're unhappy and you're miserable because your ego is the enemy and your ego got in the way. But if you'd realize this world and life are filled with elokus, and whatever you have is what you're meant to have, and whatever's happening is what's meant to be, and that God is in control and you submit and surrender to Him, then you'd be happy, you'd be calm, you'd be cool, you'd be collected, because it's all exactly the way it's supposed to be. And He is in charge and He is in control and He is up above. What am I bent out of shape? What am I nervous or anxious or worried or miserable or resentful or angry or arrogant? Tachas. That's what Rav Shor is teich. You hear this? Tachas. What's underneath? The 98 curses aren't visited upon us because we didn't smile. They're visited upon us because underneath the fact that we didn't smile is we don't believe. You're going through motions. Love it that you daven, you learned daf yomi, you gave tzedakah, you volunteered at the closet, you gave your leftover food to Shefa. I love it. Beautiful, says Hashem. Check, 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 check. But it was all just a checklist. You were just going through motions. Underneath all of it, we didn't have a relationship. Underneath all of it, there was nothing between us. Tachas, underneath. What was the reason, the cause? What was underneath? Tachas, what's underneath why you're not happy and smiling? Because your ego's in the way. Because you haven't included, you're not involved, you're not engaged in a relationship with me. Because if you were, you'd be able to smile no matter what's happening. We know, we've seen people who smile. Even my daughter just gave birth, she's gonna kill me if she hears this. I was FaceTiming her maybe while she was in labor, and each contraction, the stronger it got, the bigger a smile she had. I said, why are you smiling? She's like, I don't know, and it hurts so much. I just smile. She smiles. It was the most beautiful thing I ever saw. She's so sweet and delicious and pure. And Tahor, which is why literally, almost literally her middle name, Yirat Tahora. A smile. When you're in pain, you can smile if you realize this is going to yield a beautiful thing. This is part of a process of something bigger and greater. There's a reason and a cause of why this is happening. It's all from Hashem and it's from above and it's why He's doing it. You can smile even through excruciating pain. We have that capacity. We can do it. Some do it naturally. They're beyond belief, they must take after their mother, and others have to work on it, their father, to put on a smile even when they don't feel like it. But tachas, underneath why we don't smile. So the 98 curses, the tochah and the klala, are not visited on us because we didn't smile. That's a cruel God. We don't believe in Him. Why? Because mitachas, underneath, the reason we're not smiling is because we're worried. Smile. Smile. Walk around, be happy, put on a smile, be joyful, because it's all organized, choreographed, curated from above. Even when it hurts, even when it's hard, even when it's inconvenient, even when it's uncomfortable, it's all from Him and we can smile. And smiling makes it better. Smiling makes it better. I read an article during that horrific pandemic that hit us. I don't even want to say its name. I wrote an article because there was research that showed that if you smile while you got a shot of something, I don't even want to mention its name, but if you smiled while you got it, the shot hurts less. It's fascinating. And the researchers tried to understand why. Some suggested because when you engage micro muscles around the mouth, it actually releases a chemical in the brain that makes it less painful. So it's not some metaphysical, spiritual. It's because when you engage micro muscles to smile, then it releases a chemical in the brain, oxytocin, that allows you to feel less pain. Beautiful, if that's the reason. God bless. But the other reason is because when you smile, when you're happy, when you're positive, and you recognize, then you can get through anything, including pain. It makes the pain diminished. It makes it less painful. Whether it's a shot in the arm or a shot in life, we have that ability, tachas. We can smile. So tzadik be'emunaso yichya. This is our new meter. Are you smiling? Ooh, there's a lot of emuna going on. Are you miserable, resentful, angry? Then, ooh, 1 second, what's going on? Where's the emuna holding? Where's the emuna holding? What's happening with it? Okay, page 20, middle of page 20. Binyana shal chashivas bebihiras emuna kedivrei acharidim mesuper achasot shechazo mashiach arucha etzal rabo ubnei yirashalo achidushim shalomad sham. There's a story of a chassid returned from a long sit-down with his Rebbe, and the people of his city, when he returned from that journey, asked him, "Nu, what'd you learn? He spent time with the Rebbe, what'd you learn?" Ona ha-chassid, the chassid answered, "Etzalat Rebbe lamadati sheyesh HaKadosh Baruch Hu ba'olam." You went for Hashem Yom Kippur to the Rebbe, and you came back, and all you can report is not a great insight on a parsha, is not that you finished a Masechta of Shas, is not some holy Torah. You came back with, all you came back with was, I learned there's a God in the world. Kamuvana kol tamu al tshuva. You can imagine all of his friends in his city wondered, that's what you came back with? V'chi b'shvil davar kaza yatzarach l'tzarach l'nitzor l'rebi? That? You had to use your miles, or your points, or your money to travel and to leave, to go and to discover, and that's what you came back with, is this treasure that there's a God in the world. Uncle Moshe could have taught you that. Hashem is here, Hashem is there, Hashem is everywhere. Put on Uncle Moshe, you'll know that. A 3-year-old kid who talks about Hashem could tell you that. That there's a creator of the universe. For that, you left and spent money and time and energy and effort to go see the Rebbe. Karo eifel mishra shavash b'samach v'shalo asahim yesh ha-kadosh baruch hu ba'olam. So he went to the neighboring office and he said, is there a God in the world? U'tshuvaso aysa b'vade. The answer was certainly. Shama zos ha-chasav v'hizbele sh'olav hu omer sheyesh ha-kadosh baruch hu v'ilo ani yodeya. Said he, I asked, is there a God in the world? And he said, yes. He said there's a God in the world. I know there's a God in the world. There's an enormous difference between saying there's a God in the world and knowing there's a God in the world. How do you know if someone knows there's a God in the world? Do they smile? Are they happy? Are they positive? You can see. Do they worry? How do they sleep? How do we carry ourselves? What do we speak about? Emanta ki adaber. Do we talk about, do we invoke the language of Emunah Hashem? Is he part of our conversation? Do we ask him for clarity? Do we daven on what to do next? We have to get to that level of faith that David HaMelech, King David, describes. In Perakuf Lamed Hei, Capital 135, David HaMelech describes, I know. Ki gadol Hashem, that God is great, va'adoneinu, he's a great, and he's a master more than any other God. Ha'emunah tzricha liyos davar chai u'mukhshi l'lo safek. Do you believe? Someone stops you on the street today. Someone at work, someone at Starbucks asks you. Taking a poll, Americans, we're gauging Americans, we're doing a poll, we're taking a census. Do you believe in God? Your answer should be, absolutely not. I don't believe in God, I know God. I believe in the tooth fairy, or snuffleupagus, or I believe, I don't know, something else. That's belief, that the Mets are ever going to have a winning season. That takes a belief. I'm a Yankee fan, not so much to talk right now, but that's a long leap of belief. That takes belief and that takes faith. But when it comes to God, I don't believe, I know. If someone stopped you and said, do you believe that your mother is your mother? What would you answer? Do you believe your father is your father? Say, believe? What is the matter with you? How insulting. What is the matter with you? I don't believe my mother is my mother. I know my mother is my mother with complete certainty and confidence, clarity and conviction. I don't believe my... Do you believe this child that you're now holding in your arm? Oh, you believe that that's your child? Do I believe? What is the matter with you? I know with every fiber of my being. So when someone stops you and says, do you believe in God? The answer is no. I don't believe in God. I know God. You believe in something that you have to take a leap for. I don't have to take any leap. I know, I have a relationship, I've seen, I feel, I hear. Right? We told the story many times. You read a poem about a shepherd, Chav Gimel, Hashem Ru'i Lo Achzard. You read about the shepherd, I know the shepherd. I know the shepherd. Our emunah has to be so visible on us that it's clear to everyone that we don't believe in God. We know God. By the way, this is all over. You were shown not to believe, you were shown ladas, to know. We say in Aleinu every time. V'yadata, know today and put it in your heart. The Torah in several places doesn't say believe in God, doesn't say have faith in God. Torah says, know God. That's the kind of relationship. Like you know your mother's your mother's, your father's your father. Like hopefully you know your spouse is who you were meant to be with the rest of your life. Hopefully that level of knowledge, you know your child is your child. You know, you don't have to believe, you don't have to have faith. You know. And this is one of the efforts, one of the avoda. Again, this sefer is trying to capture the chassidus. What is chassidus? What did it bring to the world? And one of the focuses, one of the emphasis of chassidus was to bring alive this level of emuna, to bring it alive. Meaning, before chassidus, people believed in God, but it wasn't necessarily demonstrated in daily life. Someone who sat for the Nefesh HaChaim, HaChaim Volozhiner, for the Litvishe, where Torah is the center of the universe, Torah learning, you could learn Torah 23 hours a day, you got to sleep for 1 hour, and never mention God's name. You're talking about what happens if an ox gores another ox, what happens if I borrow money, I didn't pay, what happens, what's the measure of a shofar, how long does a tekiah have to last? What about God? Did it come up? Did he come up? Certainly if you stop and ask, do you believe in God? They too would say, no, I know God, I know him through the Torah of his that I learn. But they don't talk about God. Chassidus came along and said, we have to start talking and never stop talking about God. God has to be in our meal and fabreng and l'chaim, in the Torah learning too. Of course, Chabad is Chochma Bina and Das. The focus of Tanya is the centrality and the supremacy of Torah learning. But the avoda of Torah's Chassidus is to live with Amuna, to live with an Amuna that's palpable, tangible, visible, an Amuna that's knowledge, not faith or belief. To hold it and to turn it over into something that draws us, that gives us life in this incredible, incredible way. In this incredible way. We'll finish one more paragraph. In the Sefer Shomer Amunim, it talks about at length the power and the eternality of tapping into the Pnimiyas HaTorah, not just to learn the laws, but to go into the deep meaning, the reason, the why, and the connection to Hashem. V'sham Kasav, it says there, She'in mashbusa shal emunah sh'adam yotza dibur emunah pivstam. Ela alav lavid lakinin shal tziur benefesh. Real emunah is lived when it's not just words, but when it's imagery and imagination. Imagination. Vision. I'm not talking about having an image or using your imagination, what God looks like, how long and how white is his beard. That's not what we're meant to do. But klomar yitachin sha'adam yomer pa'amayim achoyim shema yisrael shem echad, avla ein kol hechrach sha'amira tif'al davar ma benafsho. You could say shema in the morning and shema at night, and even though you're saying the words of shema, is it inscribed on your heart and on your soul? Is it visible in your conversations, in your calculations, in your decision making? That you believe, that you know, and that you include, and you feel the presence of Hashem. Page 21. That shouldn't be surprising. When you say Shema, it's not going to impact your soul. If first of all, you don't know what Shema means, and second of all, you're not in a relationship with Hashem. If you're having conversations with someone who's not on the other side, then your conversations aren't going to yield much of a closeness or connection. And if you're having conversation in a language you don't understand. So if I articulate an entire message to Yecheved, but she's not there on the other side, it's not going to impact my relationship. I need to have a relationship and be present in order for the conversation to be meaningful. And if she's present, and she's on the other side, but I'm talking to her in Japanese and I don't know what I'm saying and what it means, it's not going to yield a closeness and a connection, an affection. You need both the combination of, I need to understand what I'm saying, I need to be saying it in the context of a relationship with you. And the same is true with Hashem. I need to understand what I'm saying, and I need to be saying it in the context of a relationship with you. Person has to be Hashem. You have to be in a conversation your whole day with Hashem. When you wake up until you fall asleep, a non-stop conversation with Hashem. Help me with this. Thank you for that. Thank you for the other thing. I spoke this past Shabbos. We're amazing at the Tefillah Saderach. We're great at the ask before, but we got a lot of work to do on the thank you after. I recently flew back and the guy next to me woke up when we landed, looked out the window and saw we landed safely, and he crossed himself. And I thought to myself, huh? I was already on my way, jumping to grab my luggage and order the Uber and be the first one off, maneuver and figure out and get going. He remembered when we landed, oh, we said Tefillah Saderach before we took off, but he remembered when we landed to say thank you. So do we remember when we land? That I said on Shabbos was our homework at the end of the year. I don't know if anybody's doing the homework. Open your calendar, go through it, look at the last 12 months and see the things we worried about that we barely think about now. Look over the last 12 months, the places we went, the experiences we had, the people we spent time with. And our year is landing. We're landing the plane of the journey of this year. We said Tefillah Saderach at the beginning of last year, and we're about to say Tefillah Saderach for next year. Our prayer for her may go smoothly and well and safe and secure. Let the Wi-Fi work, the TVs work, let the blue chips come back. Let them have my drink. Let it all work. Let it all be on time. That, at the beginning of the year, we're all going to have our long list for Rosh Hashanah. But do we, at the end of the year, also have a long list of gratitude of thank you? Thank you, Hashem. The baby came. The time it works out. Mirza Hashem, Bli Ayin Hara, to be back for Rosh Hashanah, so there's not even a conflict. A whole lot of tefillah went in before. Let it work out. Is it matched? Is there an equal amount of tefillah after that says thank you? Wow, thank you. Thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you. Thank you. So whether we live with Emunah is not just academic. Emunah is not just evidence for God's existence. Emunah is not just when the pollster comes and says, taking a poll, do you believe in God? Emunah is in every decision, in every action, in our demeanor, in our lab returns, in our blood pressure, in our smile, in our everything, in our sleep measurements. All of that will show and demonstrate and reflect the emunah, because tzaddik be'emunah se'yichya. The tzaddik has to have emunah that is alive and well. Stay tuned whether and where and if we'll have emunah shir next week. Otherwise, we'll continue. This may be the last shir for the year, but we'll certainly continue next year. Good news is next year is next week. Pay attention soon for the launch of Nishmasi, not sure exactly when. Wishing everyone a day filled with besaros tovos, yeshuas, and nechamos. A day filled only with the best of everything.